It's March 2011. This is It's.
Okay, go ahead. Classic. You got it. You know what you're doing here.
Wait, is it going to go, I'm Chris Rima, I'm Sean Bianca?
Yeah, you're the new Nick Brecken.
I'm Nick Brecken. I'm Nick Brecken. Okay. I'm Nick Brecken.
God, that was so funny to me. I'm
Nick Brecken. It's funny coming in.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm...
Was that you?
That was Chris.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
It's this is the Idle Thumbs Conf Grenade for GDC 2011, 25th Anniversary Edition.
I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Sean Bannerman.
And I'm Jake Rodkin. And we're here to talk about shit, I guess.
Video games.
Yeah, talk about video games specifically.
And developers conferring. And talk about their video games.
So
tell us about the greatest game you guys saw today.
Oh, Button.
I thought that was a second
Nidhogg. Oh, yeah, I mean Nidhogg.
They're both pretty good. But I would say Nidhogg is the coolest thing I saw today.
Yeah, Nidhogg is one of those games that's been the talk of a certain subset of the game, yeah. Sort of press and enthusiast indie dudes for a long time. And I keep sort of, you see the tweet of like, oh, I played Nidhogg at some art installation. I'm like, right. Nidhogg?
Well, it's by Mark Essen, who's, I don't know how many games he's done, but one of his previous games, which is an even more obscure thing, is Fly Wrench. Did you guys play Fly Wrench at all?
No.
That was an insane game where you play this crazy... like twirling spaceship on a 2D plane that just has to navigate through a crazy maze thing. And it's the twitchiest...
You play a spaceship that has to navigate through a crazy maze?
Yeah, but it's which is a, you know, sounds pretty mundane, but there's the movement of your ship is this crazy jerky back and forth thing.
Is that because it's a fly wrench?
Yeah. It's a weird, weird thing. But you should play it, Fly Wrench. It's one of those games where, almost like Quap, in a way, it's almost like the space version of Quap.
I was like, so this is your favorite game.
Oh, Space yeah. Quap.
Space Quap. But it's definitely more playable than Quap, but it's still fucking hard as shit. But it's one of those games where once you get it, you know, once you sort of realize how this ship flies around, you just keep wanting to do it until you get it right. It's really, really, it's a bizarre, cool, interesting game. Nidhogg is way more accessible than Fly Wrench.
Yeah, Nidhogg is nothing like that. Nidhogg is just...
No.
It's a competitive fencing game, which then once you throw your sword away, it turns into a competitive fisticuffs game.
Right.
But that's not really what it's about either.
The other guy still might have a sword.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a game where each of you has to reach the far right or the far left of the screen, depending on which side of the screen you start on.
Yeah.
And if you kill the other guy on a given screen, it allows you to run one full screen in your direction, and then the other guy will respawn. And then you can either kill him again and keep running, or he'll kill you, and then he'll run in his direction.
Right, I mean, that's the simple version, but I mean, the mechanics for how the sword fighting works and how jumping and ducking and sword throwing works means that you can also end up accidentally sort of hoodwinking the person where they'll throw the sword at you, and then you do a running slide, duck under the sword, duck under them, and then just run out of the room, so they end up chasing you because your running speeds are exactly the same.
Right, like so, if you kill a guy, you can run as many screens as you can make before he kills you again. You don't have to keep killing him.
Right, so like if the other guy throws away his sword and then misses you with it, you basically just jump over and slide under this person and then they have to chase after you in a horrible, humiliated fashion.
If somebody makes a big mistake like that, like...
Every single screen, the guy will respawn.
Oh, does he respawn fully equipped?
He respawns equipped and facing you.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah.
But if you make it out alive and chase the other guy off the screen, I don't think that you always come back with your sword, or is that... Or just the person who runs... If you run off the screen without a sword and you're the dominant player at that point,
then
you don't have your sword.
No. But when you respawn, you always get it.
Yeah, so you have to hope that another guy throws his sword at you and fails.
Right.
So that you can then pick up his sword and kill him with it.
But anyway, I got a very stripped down, simple control scheme. There are only two buttons other than the D-pad.
Yeah, they actually, at the IGF, they had it wired up to two NES controllers.
Yeah, so I was going to ask what there was.
It's a D-pad A and B, but I mean,
it's coming out on PC, so you'll be able to play whatever controller you want.
Yeah, they've demoed it before at various things with two different people on the same keyboard or with two wired Xbox controllers.
Yeah.
It's
really cool. Jake and I got into a really extended, probably the longest game I saw anyone play there today.
Yeah.
Where it was,
that doesn't mean that we're both good. It means
it's equally matched.
I think we were both getting better at roughly the same pace.
Yeah, and then you got slightly better.
I won, bitch. But it was good. It's one of those cool games where you can feel, because the entire point of the game is literally get to a far side of the map, it you can quite easily feel the flow and the back and forth and kind of when someone's right, really pushing ahead.
Each of the screens, like, it starts off in a center screen with the two guys in a swinging chandelier, and then each subsequent screen out is uniquely themed. There's sort of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 screens to the left, and then an identical 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 screens out to the right. Mm-hmm. So you know, oh, I'm on the screen with the crazy clouds in the background and the three pits. Right. And then if you fight backwards 6 screens the opposite direction, you end up at the mirrored version of that, and like, okay, you know, now the tables have completely turned. Yeah. So we're at this
You're aware of how far you are away from.
Yeah, you get to remember which screen is which. There aren't that many. I mean, that's smart. And it's cool. It's much more elegant, in my opinion, than having just like a health bar or something.
Of course.
Like it's a total. It's like a really stripped down but very deep and elegant fighting game. Mm-hmm. Like it's a really incredible piece of game design. I mean, there's so few inputs, but you can do so much with them, and there's so much variance.
It feels like a weird mix between like Super Mario Brothers and Super Smash Brothers.
And Prince of Persia.
Well, the thing that we were talking about, and I'm sure has been said 1,000,000,000 times, that's kind of interesting about it, is that it can also kind of be played as if you are a single player. You're playing a single player game where your goal is to get from right to left.
Yeah.
And then when you kill an enemy, you go to the next screen, and there's another enemy waiting for you, except that every single time, it's the guy who you're fighting against. Right. You're sort of,
but it feels like a respawning NPC enemy.
Yeah, you're sort of, yeah, your personal mission, if you're the dominant player at that particular point, is just to sort of quest to the left or quest to the right, depending on which person you are.
Yeah.
And then if you're losing the fight, you're entirely on the defense. It's weird.
So it seems really like cool. A game that its ideal play scenario is like with your buddy in the same room.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, can't.
I think it'd be really tough to do online.
I think that this game started off as like an installation type game where it only would show up at venues.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're trying to bring it to other.
It's coming to PC Mac now. Yeah. Cool. And we're in fact missing the official GDC Nidhogg tournament where they, I guess, I don't know if they did a ladder or what, but at the IGF they had an orange spandex bodysuit and painted shoes, and a yellow spandex bodysuit and painted suit and painted shoes, sitting up next to the game, which presumably were for the final round of the tournament, when the people playing would have had to dress up as the Nidhogg characters. So we're missing that tonight, which is too bad. But instead, we're bringing you this podcast.
And the Giant Bomb podcast, which I guess we can mention.
Oh, yeah. We were also on the Giant Bomb GDC podcast day one today, wherein they had a green-screened Chris miniaturized sitting on the table with a singing space asshole. So watch that video on the internet.
The fucking video setup those guys have is out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys have the den that anybody wishes they had as an office space.
Anybody's workplace. Yeah, anybody's jealous.
Yeah. Underground bar.
Crazy multi-camera live TV setup spending their whole office. They have, an underground secret bar.
A dungeon.
A weird kill room in the back. Two green screens.
Heavy iron door. Did you see that door? It's fucking heavy.
Well, somebody said like, oh, you're going to drag me to the dungeon. I was like, there's no, oh my God, there's a goddamn dungeon. Like,
that's a huge vault door in the back. And then that room is just like this cement room with a hose or something.
It's just hard to imagine because, I mean, it's one of those buildings that was clearly like right after the earthquake went back up or was pre-earthquake. And
it survived the 06 earthquake intact, apparently.
Oh,
so there you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you go down below the water line to their basement and you can see the sort of 100-year-old brick and iron supports that keep this decrepit building.
It's very nice looking.
It's beautiful, but it then take that as a base and then get a contractor to make a really elegant, like classy bar in it.
And then you have the giant bomb office.
And then put a bunch of dudes
in there.
And
then everyone who
doesn't
work there is sad.
That's
what happened.
But they're good hosts.
No, they're
not
really
like
cool.
This is our clubhouse. You can't come in.
No, they're fed us the delicious pretzels with peanut butter inside of them.
They did do that.
A delicious treat.
They got a kegerator. They're doing all right. Anyway, we should just promote the Giant Bombcast.
Yeah, really.
They have that Cuba Gooding Jr. Pearl Harbor poster.
They do have that giant Cuba Gooding Jr.
What else do they have?
Let's talk about it. I saw.
How about that GDC?
I didn't see much GDC. I'm working on a video game.
Well, you were recruiting dudes, though.
Did recruit some dudes. A couple guys. There was a lady I talked to. She was nice. But it's hard to recruit at GDC. I mean, for any readers who are ever thinking about going to GDC, if I was just showing up, I would be really down to go to the classes. But GDC is a hard place to pound the pavement and find a job, definitely. But same time, met some cool guys. I mean, you know. You stopped by. You talked to them. You didn't really do much recruiting.
No, I didn't.
No. You guys see all the cool stuff. I mean,
I walked by and said, I'm on vacation.
Yeah, you're vacationing quite well. Yeah. You saw Mr. Hawking today?
Yeah, Clint Hawking gave a pretty sweet talk today.
It was his talk by Clint Hawking. It was good. Mm-hmm. It was what I wanted to see at GDC, and then I saw it. I was happy. It's good. Yep. He's got a bigger room this year.
Yeah, he's moving on up. Clint Hawking, a Far Cry 2 fan.
That's the thumb bump. That's a thumb bump. For sure.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
Has to be the thumb bump.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Clint now that we've preached Far Cry 2 for so long. Yeah. What's so funny is, oh, Chris, you were here not even 48 hours. And I come out of my room, make some breakfast, and you guys, oh, let's put on a video game. Let's play a video game in the office. I peek my head into the office. Are you guys fucking playing Far Cry 2? Yeah.
Jake just loaded up Far Cry 2.
Jesus.
It was good, though. We played it for several hours.
Yeah, it was good.
Fun.
Yeah.
It's a good game. I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
It's a good game to watch Jake play because he's a neurotic, crazy person. Nothing you do is smooth ever. I'm just going to fucking go into this. This base, shoot some guys, get the lady, get out of here.
Open world, open objective games just plague my neuroses like nothing else. Can I go left? Oh, I guess I can, but oh, God. Oh, okay. Snipe, looking through the scope at this guy. Oh, I think he saw me. I can't fucking tell where this guy is. Oh, it probably wasn't helping
by constantly being like, oh, there's diamonds here. Get out of the car.
The light's blinking. I know it's blinking, but there's a...
It's really fun to sit on those stools behind you while you neurosis out.
Jake spent several minutes just walking over the plants that, as you walk over them, the sort of leaves of the plants kind of crunch down, and it's really a really nice effect. And Jake was like, man, I just love these plants. I can just walk all over these plants for 50 years. This is great.
Yeah, when I was a kid, we had a dog who, whenever we had a Christmas tree there, would always get underneath it because it would be like a back scratching thing, and it would just sit there for 20 minutes in slow motion, just walking around, and that was me in Far Cry.
That's awesome. I'm glad you have a story about that. Explains your deep seated need to walk over plants.
Yeah, I was watching my dog walk under that tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've
talked. Good thing we're talking about Far Cry.
I've talked about my complete paralysis when playing an open objective game on the cast a few times. That it just. Oh, that's like when we were talking about Deus Ex 3 today. That was the same thing. Like at the beginning, when I first played the first Deus Ex, everyone else in the world talks about how the game makes you feel like the most empowered badass who can do all these things. And I'm just like, oh, choice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair.
And then I uninstall the game.
I think it's accepted that the first level of Deus Ex really throws you into it. But once you get past that, it's...
Oh, the first level of Deus Ex is like they always tell you when you're an undergrad that if you don't want to enroll in the wrong Psych 1 class because you're going into the one that they try to weed out all of the people who want to get the major but aren't fit for it, that's the first level of Deus Ex, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, you're not cut out for this.
Well, it's funny.
You're right, I'm not. Mario.
I know in the past I've talked about Umberto Eco and his novels before, but I was reading one of the...
Does he do that?
Yeah, he does. It's really interesting, actually, because...
The opening of his second chapter is like, okay, for all you fuckers who are still here,
no, it's true.
Pussies, you put the book down.
his books are amazing. Like, he's an incredible author, and I would recommend him to anyone. Like, The Name of the Rose would be a great starting point for anyone. But, I was reading this long appendix he was doing. He did in one of the editions of one of his books. I don't even remember which one. And he was saying, literally, as far as he's concerned, he intentionally... will spend, the first 100 pages with just the densest, straight into the deep end shit imaginable. And he's like, yeah, and if you can get through that, you're good. And, you're going to have a great time. But, if you can't, maybe you shouldn't be reading this book. And, it's kind of a dickish thing, but, also, I kind of respect that he has the balls to do that. And, I don't know. I think it's cool. I don't know if I'd necessarily recommend everyone make their video games like that. But, I mean, they're
not necessarily.
No,
but it's an option. I mean, let's not keep talking about Far Cry 2, but that game does.
Let's talk about Stalker: Call of Pripyat.
That game does that too. So Far Cry 2 does that thematically, but Stalker: Call of Pripyat does that for real in actual gameplay terms.
Oh, by the way, the reason we were talking about Far Cry 2 is because Clint Hawking had a panel at the Game Developers Conference in the year 2011, and we saw it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
We could talk about that.
Oh, yeah,
that's the panel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I brought it up.
Oh, I know, but we decided that we would talk about our experience playing Far Cry 2.
But Far Cry 2
came out?
Was it 2008? We should do a 3-year anniversary show.
Far Cry 2.
Anyway, let's talk about his actual panel.
A weird exception to the rule where the entire episode has us talking about Far Cry 2.
It'd be nice if we set the time aside to only talk about
After a few allusions to Far Cry 2 over the years, we decided we were going to decide to sit down and really just cover this game.
That is now. We're doing that now. This is probably more than we've talked about this game since, since we were doing regular episodes.
All All right, well, how about that talk, Hawk and Talk?
Now I've completely forgot about the Hawk and
Dynamics.
Talk.
It was on Dynamics.
Oh, that's true. It was on Fluid Dynamics.
Thermodynamics.
And Thermodynamics. It's, yeah, it was sort of the, you know, intersection point of thermal and fluid dynamics. In,
keep going.
Yeah, you know, you're...
In your
this
game.
This is good radio.
Game narrative.
In your game.
Fuck off.
I hate you guys.
What
are you going to say?
I've never seen Clint in real life. I saw his MIT talk and, you know, like, it's interesting.
He's a good guy.
He's a good man. I've seen him in real life. We've had a drink. But like I've never been to
never seen him talk.
So like, what was it about?
It was about dynamics.
He picked up basically. I mean, he's talked about similar things before, but I guess he picked up mainly where Chris Hecker actually kind of left off with a talk he gave about sort of people spend a lot of time talking about what do games mean. You know, what is the meaning of this game? What is the meaning of that game?
What is game?
But Hecker and today Clint sort of, I guess at this point. Feel that it's more interesting to, or at least more necessary, to actually talk about how do games mean. Yeah, like, not only like what does an individual game mean, but like by what method do games mean things in the first place? Right?
Yeah,
like,
we understand. You can't talk about what this game means if no one has actually bothered to even attempt to quantify how games can create and convey meaning
exactly,
in the first
right.
place.
Exactly, like, right. And the classic example he gave is in film, for example, editing is largely, like, for the most part, conveyed through editing, right? So like juxtaposition of two scenes, which may have absolutely no relevance individually, can create meaning through editing. But it's not entirely clear if we've actually determined what that building block is for games, right? I mean, like gameplay, sure, like in a vague sense, right? But that's
right.
Like saying moving pictures are what make
like
films
images
mean something.
For,
yeah, exactly. Which is meaningless. He talked about the mechanics dynamics aesthetic framework, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with that.
You can go over for our readers at home.
Of course, Jake and I are well versed in mechanics dynamics aesthetics.
Aesthetics. The reason like I have a soft spot for it. This is really dorky, but it's because I think that paper was presented in 2004, which was my first GDC. So I saw like one of the first talks on. That on the like the MDA theory. Of,
just imagine like, you with like a tiny backpack, being like, "Oh my god!"
Mario
on it.
That was when Idle Thumbs started. That was 2004. I was covering it for Idle Thumbs, the web video game website.
I haven't heard of it.
And it's basically the notion is that you have mechanics, which are what you actually do in the game,
right.
And then out of the sort of sensation that's created out of those mechanics, out of that comes dynamics, and then out of that comes aesthetics. So like one example he gave today was in Spelunky. You've got your whip, but when you whip a bat, it's not just like an instantaneous.
It's
like...
It's not the Castlevania whip.
And then exactly, like there's a wind up. He throws it out there, hits the bat. Like there's this pause, delay. Like you can't just like run in there and instantaneously do it because that delay is gonna mean you get your ass kicked. Mm-hmm. And so that's the mechanic that delay and that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Out of that comes this dynamic of like it creates this sense of timing with this thing. You've got to be You've got to stop and think and like, what am I doing here? I'm setting up this attack. I'm pausing. I'm going to jump a little early. I'm going to hit the guy, et cetera. All that stuff comes out of it. That's this like, and then the aesthetic that comes out of that is that essentially means this is a game about planning, about precision, about, I don't remember all the adjectives.
Calculation and timing.
Exactly. All these things like that, starting from this like very simple tuning mechanic, You work all your way up to like, what does this game actually make you feel like it's about? Like, what is the actual sense you get from doing this? Because you can make a game with almost an identical mechanic that isn't about that, right? That's just about total frantic, like with an instantaneous whip that you can just keep mashing on and it goes all the time. And that is not about that. It's probably about being frantic and about being like as opportunistic as possible all the time, right? And like the sense of just constantly pushing forward into stuff. Whereas that's not what Spelunky actually is, because this little tweak in the mechanics changes the sort of ripple outward effect. But still, all that being said, like, it's not entirely clear, like, what that means Spelunky actually means, right? Like, that's how Spelunky feels, and, like, that's the aesthetic of the game. But, like, what does it actually mean? Like, what's it saying? I don't know, as with a lot of these kinds of talks at GDC, there weren't really a lot of like concrete answers given.
Yeah, it just sort of gets people's collective brains moving.
Right, exactly, yeah.
One other thing that I thought was kind of interesting that was that he brought up a few times, not necessarily as a strict point, but was just the reminder to game designers that the human beings are playing your games, which I always think is kind of interesting, and it gets kind of left out of a lot of sort of academic and formalized game discussion of the and I mean, I guess it is probably part of the mechanic dynamic aesthetic loop to a certain degree, but that there is your game system, and then it ends up through your hands on the controller getting processed through sort of the second machine in the equation, which is a very specific human being.
Yeah.
And then that ends up getting fed back into the game system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's
That's interesting, because I feel like maybe that's a byproduct of just sort of like media critical studies in general, because it feels like people go through these critical studies programs and think about games academically with sort of the same tools that they use to think critically about like film and art and music, which are, well, which don't have that second machine. You just have, you know what I mean?
I mean, the notion,
Schindler's List isn't a good movie because people watched it the right way. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't mean anything different.
Different people get different things out of it.
Right? Like, your experiences that you bring with you when you watch Schindler's List are inextricable, like, from your experience of watching it, right? Like,
absolutely, but that's not part of the critical studies instrument.
The things that you bring into Schindler's List don't end up getting fed back into Schindler's
List. That's true.
List.
Yeah, that's
what I'm saying.
Which is why
how it affects the audience feels like always kind of left out of the critical studies instrument. Well, you can't. I mean, I remember, like, it was always a sort of, like, being told in school to divorce intent from the text, because all you have is the text, and if you try to decipher the intent, then you're being this sort of extra.
Yeah, you're being this sort of weird, like, judicator here.
Yeah, you know. Whereas that's actually, like, completely, that's not the case with games. I mean, that's kind of what he's talking about.
I would actually say intent is even less important in games than even in other forms, right?
Like, no, but it's important for the other half of the machine. Like, what is your intent with the game that you're playing? You know what I mean? Like, what are the people trying to accomplish?
Oh, you mean from the player's standpoint. Yeah,
which
becomes part
of the critical studies instrument, which I don't think
that's true. You look at Far Cry 2, and he was talking about how, you know, a lot of people, I think most people, played that game in a completely chaotic, insane way, because that's basically what the mechanics of that game encourage.
You're just sort of, you're trying to throw things into this whirling machine and hope that the outcome that you're expecting is there, but you're,
right, exactly.
you're interfering with the laws of nature, basically.
Big, weird, like, reaction loop in that game that leads to insane, hilarious, crazy situations. But then there's also, you know, the guys like Ben Abraham and our buddy Nels who played that game with the permadeath kind of self-imposed rule, where if they died in the game, they died for real.
And, well, if they die in the game, their save was erased and started over.
Game, yeah.
Yeah.
But Nels did that?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was one. There was a bunch of guys.
A bunch of guys just thought that it would be a weird sort of academic exercise to play that game as a simulator.
But that introduces a whole different level of intent into that game, right? Like,
yeah,
that,
yeah. Oh, for
like
sure.
That
I would behave completely. Yeah.
Well, the thing that I thought was funny that Quinn really said is that those guys were just like, oh man, the game was kind of boring.
Yeah, exactly. But like when you think about it though, that's really, I mean, I would imagine being in that situation wouldn't be necessarily boring, but it certainly wouldn't be exciting, right?
You'd end like up with the boredom of real life, though. Exactly. Just like, I'm waiting for the actual guaranteed clean shot.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. Then you become the dude who sits in the van for 12 hours.
Like any real life sniper who actually, like, you'd look at a documentary about what snipers do. It's like, they sit in a fucking tower for like 3 days, not sleeping, just waiting for it. Yeah, exactly. Like,
I saw that in Meet the Sniper.
He did peens.
If you watch documentaries such as Meet the Sniper.
But like, yeah. Well, that's, I don't know. I'd like to talk to Nels about that. It's really, like, I don't know.
Well, he wrote about it and all those guys.
I don't read. Come on.
Fuck that shit.
It's above 49, which is a good blog that he writes.
That he did talk about, and it honestly felt a little bit shakier to me, just because the example that was used was Schindler's List, which is always that sort of thing, quite is questionable. But just the fact that the story shouldn't dictate what the game is, but you have to admit the fact that adding some narrative conceits, adding aesthetic conceits to your game are going to flavor the human side of the equation that's playing your game. It's going to flavor the dynamics part of that. And the example that he gave, for better or for worse, was if you take Tetris and say that it's Schindler's List, and you, or that it's, that it's.
Oh, that was, we were talking about this once in the cast, weren't we? About
that's Train, I think.
Yeah, this was inspired by
Train. But the idea was, what if in Tetris your job is to load Jews onto the trains as efficiently as possible. So once you fill an entire row, they're loaded onto the train.
And the train leaves.
And if you back up the stuff too much, the Nazi war effort is fucked because you're not sending people to their deaths.
Yeah.
So then,
this is going to, Soren Johnson talked about this last year, but we've talked about this a lot on the cast, but theme and mechanics.
Theme versus mechanics. Yeah, exactly.
But
The problem is, in the Tetris example, though, is that if you don't entirely, like, if you don't rethink the entire framework in which it's presented to the player, like,
yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
His example is just brought up for the sort of weird, isolated, this isn't real case of...
Your
brain processes the game's goals versus what versus what it expects you to do a little bit differently than if it's abstract or if it's completely positive, to the point that you end up with dudes on the internet who are going to start saying that they refuse to play and just stack blocks up vertically or whatever. But yeah, it was a goofy example. I just liked that it meant that
it did illustrate his point. Absolutely, yeah.
You were going to say something that I interrupted.
Oh, no, it's okay. You already got to it.
Okay.
But yeah, it was cool. I mean, I felt like this Clinhagen talk actually was sort of, was kind of almost more of a synthesis of a lot of stuff that's been kind of going around both in his head and in sort of that sphere of game discussion, as opposed to some of his talks, which I feel like totally come out of the blue and are just like these revelatory,
It was a good way to open GDC, though, I thought.
It was. Oh, yeah, that was true. That was the first session we saw the first day. Weird, it's only the first day of GDC. I mean, it's only an indeterminate day of GDC.
Who knows when this is released?
Which could be any of the days or after it.
Maybe this will come out when the video comes out.
Well, that video's coming out.
Yeah?
Yeah, probably. If my computer will ever export it, it'll come out.
Point is, ellipsis. Did you guys see anything else today? You guys saw...
We saw Bastion at the IGF booth.
Oh, God. That's the one I meant
to
go... worked
on by Greg Kusavin.
I meant to go play that
Yeah,
today.
You played through it. I watched it, but I couldn't hear very much. Oh, but I did hear the rad dynamic narrator.
Yeah, that's like, the coolest part about that game.
I was
going
to ask you about
that.
Chris talked about it. Cool. I wanted to talk to you about that.
Yeah, it's...
It's neat.
As you
Jake
play...
did the shifty eyes. He did the "oh, this is going to be cool" thing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I didn't get a very detailed view of it, but I mean, that game throughout it, as you play, there's a guy narrating it as if you're inside of a weird sort of fairy tale audiobook of your game, which I thought was going to be annoying potentially.
Yeah, it's almost like the when we were talking about Prince of Persia, a year or two ago.
Oh, the I fell on some spikes. Oh no, that
yeah,
I fell on some
exactly.
spikes. Yeah,
but. But going on through the whole game and not ridiculous.
But not that. It's not the annoying version.
The key thing that they did to make it work, one, was to basically once something really notable happens, you don't keep calling it out every time it happens, right?
Right.
So like the first time you get to a particular like sort of...
Like you fell off
boss,
the cliff.
Boss enemy, the guy's like, and then the kid came upon a big blue flame, and like you kill the guy, but then it doesn't keep doing that every single time you find it.
Like,
and like
then
the
another
first time
flame
I,
was there.
Yeah, exactly.
He found the third, the fourth, right. the fifth,
exactly,
another,
yeah.
another,
this kid
another,
can't
another.
Stop.
Another.
And the first time I fell off the cliff, the guy was like, and then the kid fell off the edge. Nah, I'm just joshing you. He's all right.
Well, there was like a little bit of a delay where like he fell off the edge to his death, and then the guy lands back on the board. Like,
yeah, and good. I'm like, but that only happens once. Like I actually deliberately walked off the cliff like six more times over the over several minutes spaced in between just to see if it would come back, and it never did. Which
there was also a time when there were a bunch of enemies, just like a shitload of guys, and you just went and ran past all of them. The guy's like, and then he ran past all those guys.
Yeah, he was like, the kid just kept on running.
Yeah.
He's like,
that's
oh, man,
great.
Quality.
Oh, that's really,
I was so pleased
great.
By that
yeah.
because it was it was really nice because
when games
games often fuck that up by just
they give you a cool thing to do and then forget that you could possibly do it.
Right, but even more specifically, just in terms of pacing. In the previous level, I fought these like three really huge boss characters, and it was really draining, and it took forever, right? And I finally beat them, and I'm like, all right, cool, I beat those guys. And then it just drops me into another level full of guys, and I'm like, oh, really? Do I have to fight all these guys? And so I just started running, and like the fact that the game acknowledged and supported that was so incredibly pleasing to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because it made me feel like it was legitimate that I
where it's
was
like,
just
it's
not
cool that you're running by these guys.
Exactly.
We know that you're
like,
going to.
We're down
like,
to that.
If you fought them, maybe there was dialogue for that too.
Yeah, exactly. There probably was. I mean, I talked to Greg afterwards and he said, yeah, basically what they did Like, obviously, they started off by just trying to anticipate as much as possible, but really where they got a lot of that stuff was just by watching people play the game and just on each individual level, seeing what they're most likely to do and making sure to support, you know, as much of the actual likely
Man, that's
stuff as Leisure possible.
Leisure Suit Larry text parser style. That's the story that that's the first time I ever heard about focus testing was I read some Allo interview about Leisure Suit Larry 1 where they would just watch every single person play it and all the stupid shit they would try to get Larry to do. They just logged, they key logged every single thing that anyone did in that text parser and then was like, all right, well, now we're just going to have to write responses for every single one of these.
It's funny that Al Lowe was secretly, like, one of the best adventure game designers at Sierra, at least as far as I'm concerned.
You love that Freddy Farkas?
I never played Freddy Farkas, actually. But, like, every time I see stuff like that, like old interviews with Al Lowe, I'm like, man, that guy was really clever. Like, despite the fact that he worked on the goofiest shit ever, Leisure Suit Larry, like, that guy had all kinds of, like, really solid design principles like that.
Yep.
Cool guy.
Anyway. And that legacy has continued in Bastion.
It's also got a really nice art style. It's this sort of 16-bit, very lush. Like, all the characters are 3D rendered, but they're rendered into 2D sprites. Yep. So the whole world is on a 2D plane.
It's the way I wanted Secret of Mana to look when I bought
it. It looked totally Secret of Mana.
Yeah. That one...
That image they're still using.
That key art, just epic painting from the Secret of Mana. That huge, lush forest with the little red bird and the two tiny guys. When I saw that, I was like,
this game is going to be amazing.
Oh, no, it's just...
It just looks like a Square game. Oh, really?
But the Bastion stuff, it's kind of... I mean, the color palette and the sort of painterly look remind me a lot of Braid, but it's more, like, the colors are sort of more fantastical.
They're
the looks more,
of
more
like
whimsical.
Japanese-inspired, though, than Braid, which is,
I mean, I'm really excited for that game. Those guys are, I mean, Greg is just the most stand-up guy.
He's a good dude.
Oh, what a great guy.
He was one of the first interviews ever on Idle Thumbs.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Gaynor interviewed Greg Kasavin for Idle Thumbs, like, 6 years ago. That's a weird thing.
It was about him being the editor at GameSpot.
Yeah. It's weird that, I don't know, this is a really self-conscious, like, stupid thing to bring up, but, like, it's weird to me that probably a lot of the people on the podcast, like, who listen to the podcast are completely unaware of that entire, like, first life that Idle Thumbs had. It's this weird, like, semi-marginal print. Yeah,
don't go looking for it, though, because it's all too good to read. Quality is so high that your mind would be blown.
Turn you off every other publication.
Yeah. We're trying to think of a way to bring some of that stuff back, but just as in archive form.
Yeah.
We'll see if that happens. Yeah. But yeah, that game looking really good. Super Giant game.
Really the one thing I was going to say about it is you said 16-bit style, et cetera, et cetera, but the thing that's cool about that game when you look at it is it doesn't actually look like there's any tiling sprites
in
that goddamn game.
It's really
game.
Smooth, yeah.
It just looks like every
level is...
I guess
when I say 16-bit, I mean more the color palette.
Like, it's isometric. It's got that sort of weird, like...
Almost like the way you remember a great 16-bit game.
Exactly.
The way
it's got that sort of weird pastel-y, earthy,
exactly,
cloudy look to it and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like we all remember like Yoshi's Island as being the most beautiful, lush, amazing.
Yeah, but it actually
game.
Is still.
No,
that game is still.
If you
like,
go back and play Yoshi's Island,
there's
it looks
a Super
amazing.
NES. We're in the living room right now. We just pop the cartridge in. And...
No, that game is solid. I'm not kidding. Like,
all right.
It's pixelated, obviously, but like
right.
it's
but,
gorgeous.
Like, that said, if Yoshi's Island were to pop out now and was all, you know, it would definitely look.
Yeah,
it'd be
probably,
higher res,
probably
yeah, obviously.
Closer to something like Bastion.
I really like when games
the
do that.
Stuff.
Like, that's why like Kirby's Epic Yarn really appealed to me as an idea.
I didn't play Epic Yarn. I missed it.
I
love
none of
Canvas
us
Curse.
No, but it just appeals to me. This when games sort of like are the game that you remember in your head.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Like it seems like it happens every Christmas. Hey. I go home to Wyoming.
Well, this,
like
this
I go
is...
up to my childhood room. I plug in my N64, and I'm like, oh god, Wave Race. I love Wave Race. Oh, Wave Race. You know, like
this
that's generally what happens. Every
this
time.
Is a dumb example, and it's probably maybe not entirely what you mean, but like
Far Cry 2.
That's remember when you played Far Cry as a kid and
the first time.
But no, actually, a game I think really fits that is of all things StarCraft 2, because people look at StarCraft 2 and they're like, looks exactly the same as StarCraft. It doesn't.
No,
if
StarCraft
you go back
2,
and look at
but StarCraft
2, 1,
it looks exactly like your mind's
exactly.
eye of StarCraft.
Yeah. It looks like what you imagine the painted concept art for StarCraft 1 looks like.
Yeah.
Or what your brain thought it looked like
yeah.
in its memory.
Well, that's
years
like,
ago.
I mean, it's another kind of stupid example, but that Half-Life 1 Black Mesa Source mod that's never going to come
right.
out.
Yeah.
When I look at that, I'm like, oh, that looks like Half-Life 1. And then you look
go
at
back
half,
and look at
you look Half-Life 1, you're like, wait, that actually just looks like a square.
I get that with Thief, actually. Clint was showing screenshots. Oh, no, wait. It was Kent, maybe, in the Kent Hudson talk we saw today.
I don't know.
Was showing screenshots of Thief.
Yeah, I think it was
and
the second talk.
And he was showing Thief, and I'm like, oh man, what is that, like Ultima Underworld 1? That's like,
Thief
1. I'm like, what? That's not what that game looks like in my memory.
That game feels amazing. Yeah, oh, but exactly. It looks apparently like a crappy pixely wood cube.
It does make me want to go back and play Thief again. And what's cool is since it's a PC game, you can still just crank the resolution way up, even though none of the textures are.
I wonder if this is, I mean, there's no way to know. Except Jake, you're an old man. You might be able to help us out here. But I wonder if it's a byproduct of when I played Half-Life. Like, what year did Half-Life come out?
98.
I was 14 years old. So like, I wonder if it's just if I was 24, you know, and I would be.
And your 30. Imagination had shriveled up and died.
No, if that's, you know, like there's something about remembering things as an adolescent. Maybe, I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't know what, you were like 31 when Half-Life came out.
I was 17.
Anyway, that's curious to me.
I don't think so. I think just because at the time when Half-Life came out, no one had seen anything that looked anything like it before. So you're just like, this represents the most amazing facsimile of anything like this that I've ever seen. And now you're like, well, I could build that out of
the game that did that for me.
Like, there was stuff like Quake, which was of a similar technical, or like the Quake series, which was of a similar like technical level, but Half-Life was this weird, like, at least for the time, seemingly naturalistic.
It was the first time that I'd seen like real structures built in the modern era. Just regular humans walking around saying, hey, what's up? And it was like, this is real life.
Exactly.
It's because I made a jump from like Doom 3 to Half-Life. Like that was
Doom 3?
Doom 2.
Doom 3 to Half-Life. And Half-Life didn't.
I went from I had Ultimate Doom, that had all the Dooms in there. All Dooms, Doomtown. But like I went from Doom 2 to Half-Life, so like that was a huge.
Right, you didn't get Duke Nukem 3D and Quake 1 in between.
Oh, I did play Duke Nukem 3D.
But Duke Nukem 3D was still also sprites.
Yeah.
But Duke Nukem 3D had a building that collapsed and it had pixel art tits.
That's true.
Which were
with tassels on them.
Yeah.
I remember.
The tassels really confused me.
You thought they were part of the fucking.
Well, no, I was just like, what? Because it was just like this two sprite animation of. It's like, what in the world?
Oh, I knew instantly. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I knew instantly. Them were tassels.
Yep.
Yeah. This is
well, no, because I went straight from Dante's Inferno to Duke Nukem 3D, so I thought they were Dante's tongues Inferno, emitting babies.
Commodore 64 adaptation.
Some guy's retro DMake fell through time.
Well, no, wasn't there actually like a Commodore 64 or Atari? Like, didn't screen like video of that surface like a few years
ago? I'm sure that whatever it was, it didn't have tits that had tongues coming out of them that emitted babies.
Yeah, probably not.
It's purring until the babies show up. That is gross.
Much like the poem.
I know this year at GDC they're doing that kind of like cool retro postmortem thing. Were there any today?
We haven't gone to any today, but that's
the only one I'm scheduled to go to is I'm gonna go see Will Wright's one on Escape from Bungling Bay or whatever.
I'm excited about that. It's gonna be cool.
I mean there's a bunch. It's a theme this year, but we haven't seen any of them yet.
That's neat.
We'll come back.
We missed Pac-Man and Clint Hawking was double booked with Jordan Mechner's Prince of Persia one. Oh
god, that was
disaster.
Fucking Sophie's choice this morning. Seeing like Clint, seriously,
that's a little dramatic, right?
No. Clint Hawking and Jordan Mechner are
so Jordan Mechner's dead
by a huge margin. Two of my absolute favorite people in the entire games industry. Like they're both really nice guys.
You,
they're both incredibly smart. What you don't think they're? I mean, I think those guys
Jake
are fucking brilliant.
Industry, just hanging out, being your friend.
We're not his favorites. It's okay.
No,
you guys are my fucking regular buddies. Whatever.
Go ahead.
Clint Hawking and Jordan Mechner are so goddamn smart and like. Really are very articulate, really clever. They both think about things I feel that a lot of other people don't even just bother thinking about. It's not even like they exist on a different plane or anything. It's just that they bother thinking about problems that I think a lot of people just don't think about. Like one, you know, in Clint Hawking's talk today, I think a lot of people who make games, quite honestly, don't even really necessarily bother thinking very much about like what does this mean or why does this mean?
No, yeah, we're talking about just like people spend huge amounts of their time and energy thinking about how do I get this piece of art to render well or just
exactly,
like
yeah.
I mean because making games is hard, which is
yeah,
become
which
a
is true.
Thing. It is fucking
true, super fucking true.
Yeah,
but also you can go through all these incredibly difficult problems and spend a lot of money and time and manpower and man hours making a game, and then still never even bother thinking once about like why.
Yeah, I mean, it's cultural though. I mean, those guys are doing the Lord's work. Absolutely, what they bring to the conversation of making their games, but like that is a cultural problem with the game industry.
Well, it's a cultural problem in most popular entertainment.
Bullshit. Like, if you sit down with any creative executive in the film industry, they're going to ask you what your movie is about and what you're trying to say and try to be all artistic and pretentious about it, where like people in the game industry don't even make the effort. I mean, at least this is the way it was a few years ago when it feels like the indie game scene wasn't where it is now. Like, I mean, we're just talking like 4 years ago, the indie game scene was very different.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah.
But people were bringing in their concepts to developers, and I'm sure they still do this. I don't know. I haven't worked in a developer in a long time.
A publisher.
Yeah. We're bringing their concepts to publishers and be like, oh, here's our art. And like, we have this like vertical slice we're kind of working on, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I've been in the room for a lot of those meetings.
Yeah, you're talking about like a mid-sized independent studio.
Yeah, but it's never like, you can think of all those studios. You know, I don't want to name any because it would seem like I was in the room for those guys. But at no point in the conversation is, so what is this game about?
Right.
No. What is it really about? Like, what are the themes? Like that, nobody gives a shit. You know, and it's just a cultural thing, if anything else. But it's nice that those guys are. Those guys need to do is go become VPs of production and publishers.
Yeah. They need to do the one thing they will never do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. That would be amazing.
What you're saying about the indie thing is, or the indie scene, just in the 4 years to now, is a weird, huge thing at GDC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the
because
the
feeling of like, money.
Yeah. And that is
the whole thing that happened.
That is a thing that was talked about when we were on the Bombcast that that is so pronounced at GDC. It's just even just the level of variety and the level of quality and the level of just weird polish and the sort of next tier of weird ideas with it, even just within the IGF is just it's exponentially different and better than it was when it was first starting out.
You know what's really cool is that, so I feel like the IGF started in like the very, very late 90s, basically like 99, 2000-ish. And at the time it was very like, it was basically smaller, more sort of ambitious or like, you know, creatively ambitious versions of what bigger games were. So you'd get a lot of, you know, just like more like weird, interesting strategy game concepts or like weird, interesting action game concepts, but they were very much basically like what bigger developers would be doing.
Right, but using Torque and in my house to make a small, weird. Yeah.
Right, and there were a lot of really cool stuff. And then I feel like IGF sort of started going to this direction of, you know, eventually maybe in like a few years ago, you know, like mid-2000s, maybe a little later, it was a little more just like crazy, you know, people were doing, everything was like some crazy 2D, highly abstract, sort of stylized thing, you know, or it was just all about visual weird extravagance and stuff. And I feel like now we've reached this really, really cool point where there's this whole category for indie games called the Nuovo Award, which is basically four games that are just weird as shit, like Nidhogg and Button, which we haven't even talked about yet. And then you also have the stuff like Minecraft and Amnesia The Dark Descent, which like Amnesia is what a like circa 1999 IGF game would have been, right? It's like a,
but it's also of a higher standard in my opinion.
Yeah, I know it is, but I'm just talking about broad categories here.
Yeah, yeah.
And like all in the same IGF, you have like Nidhogg, which started out as a goddamn commissioned art installation, right? All the way up, then Minecraft, just some crazy sandbox thing, and then Amnesia, which is basically like
it's like a double A survival horror.
Like near triple A, like survival horror, crazy atmospheric thing that's all about audiovisual presentation. And like all in the same competition competing against each other.
And also
that's
there's
amazing.
Things like Retro City Rampage was there, or like last year with Monaco or whatever.
Yeah. And a lot of these games, like Minecraft is in the IGF. Minecraft already sold 1 million units before it got to the IGF and has spawned an entire development studio that has already announced a second game. Excellent. Way to go. It's amazing. It's completely amazing.
I always forget that the IGF is a competition, which is nice. I'm glad that I forget that because it's not like...
Yeah, because it doesn't feel...
Well,
I mean, like...
No. I think the dudes in it are like... It seems like their hopes and dreams aren't made or broken based on whether or not they...
Although it helps a lot. They get a lot of money.
Yeah, but I mean, that's definitely true.
But one of the really cool things about the IGF is whether you win or not, if your game's actually good, just even entering the IGF guarantees a lot of people are going to play it because all the judges are journalists or, well, no, there's a lot of developers.
Yeah, but it's but like, a mix of people who you'd want to see your game.
Exactly, yeah. Right. The people who can give you publicity and the people who can talk about it to other developers, just by virtue of voting on your game, it means they have to play it. And so for a lot of, like, for example, I played Monaco for the first time at when I was a judge during last year's IGF, during the judging phase. And that's, I mean, stuff, and Nidhogg too is similar. Like, Nidhogg's one of those games where over the last several months, there's been this just like slow growing awareness of it as more and more people have played it through random, just weird means, like being an IGF judge. And that stuff's really important just for getting awareness of your game out there. And it's entirely democratic in the sense that if your game is in the IGF, there are guaranteed to be a certain number of people assigned to play it. And if those people think it's cool, they will recommend to the other judges they play it too. And
then obviously if you end up in the IGF, whether or not you win, your game's on the show floor with dozens and hundreds of thousands of people or whatever.
And then,
Like 45,000 people.
Yeah.
And that's good. And then there's organic stuff that emerges out of it. Like right now, I think this week, all IGF nominees on Steam are on sale. So guaranteed you're part of this big promotion there. I think Steam did that last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
no, it's nice. It's like rad. A culture behind it. It's really nice. The same way that, I mean, I made a Sundance reference earlier, but it's very similar to that. You know, I mean, Sundance has kind of lost its cultural cachet, I think, and people are less like, oh, what was a big movie at Sundance? It feels like that's not as big a marketing thing, but like it feels like IGF is in its heyday at this point.
Yeah, it's very cool.
It's a good time.
Very exciting. And Jake, I mean, Jake, you were just saying, just real quick, just to wrap up the IGF. Right. I mean, we were walking away from the IGF today, Jake, and you were just remarking, like, just overall, the level of quality and sort of polish and just impressiveness of all that stuff is just off the goddamn charts at this point.
I mean, it sounds dumb to say it because it sounds like I would be saying it at the exclusion of other things, but IGF is, to me, one of the best things about GDC and also, I think, one of the coolest things about the games industry at this point.
Yeah.
Not to say that, like, rad real like real games quote or whatever
of course not
commercial but, retail stuff
but you know that stuff's gonna be around
but like oh man IGF is always makes me really
it's amazing
happy.
Take
a break maybe
let's take a break
cool break
video games
all right we're back thanks for listening
video games we should hop in for video games
oh cool
it's
video games
oh cool
oh, cool video games.
Guys, they got them on phones now.
A telephone video game.
Have you heard about those cell phone games?
Have you guys seen any good butts today?
GDC? I saw one really quality tush in GDC,
How was it? What was it all about?
It was just there.
Yeah,
just
hanging out.
Just there. South Hall.
Oh, I'll have to check it out tomorrow.
I might not be there.
Yeah.
It was on the move.
It was on Move?
It was on the Move.
Oh, they on PlayStation Move.
Yeah, no, it was the same
sentence. Butts for PlayStation Move.
Ah, butts. Hold on to them. PlayStation Move.
Hold on to yours, anyway.
Well, that's the, I mean, Telltale's doing the Jurassic Park game, but
That's actually the title of the third episode.
Well, no, that's...
Butts, it's colon, hold on to them.
The PlayStation Move variant, like the casual audience variant, is Jurassic Park, hold on to your butts. Or I guess that would be for Kinect. I don't know.
It's chips with a butt.
Well, that is like how the ships with a butt. Far Cry's like version for Nintendo platforms is always like
Far Cry 1
like turret, you know.
Right.
Oh, you get the weird plastic Fisher Price murder weapon. I hate that
Jurassic
crap.
Park. Hold on,
can we just stop with that?
This is dumb, and it's probably been asked on 1,000 other places. But Nintendo at the Nintendo keynote announced that Netflix would be available as a streaming service on the Nintendo 3DS.
Cool.
My hope, which I know is not going to be the case, but it would actually make me look at it, is if they streamed the movies in 3D. I think that would be completely hilarious.
That would be amazing.
Like, if this image on the box is just of a happy mom looking at Avatar on her 3DS.
Like following official Nintendo marketing guidelines.
Yeah, where it's like the lifestyle footage of that, but then just like a crazy blue alien
coming out of the TV.
Yeah, coming out of the TV along with some goldfish and some vines and stuff. Like a motorcycle guy, like motocross guy comes leaping out. Like that's... Video game ads have been that forever, but now they'll actually...
The video game ads are
actually a thing coming out of the
screen. I never even thought about that. 3DS ads are just going to be the most barf-inducing things ever, because that era is going to completely come back.
It's going to come back full.
The boxing game where just, like, the fist of the sweaty fist.
The graphics card of the guy leaning and, like, dodging the tomahawk flying right. Down with the arrows in the wall.
Yeah, graphics card ads are still that, by the way.
I know. Like, that's not something that was from my childhood. That was something that was
from yesterday.
Yeah, me taking a dump.
In the free magazines at GDC.
EGM or something.
You and I used to talk about that a lot about just
the chrome monster on the video card box.
No graphic card box does not include like a chrome and gold demon. Yeah. Even like the most stately upper echelon ones, they always like on the side
the
flap,
back,
there's just one little like chrome. 1x1 inch chrome demon just like I'm still here.
I approve this video.
It could render me. Yeah. It's so fucking funny.
Or sometimes though they'll have the chrome demon, but then he, like, half of his face morphs into a wireframe.
Yeah, of course. So he has to go to wireframe, because it's a video game. You have to
I'm
know
drawn
game.
From polygons, but I look like this with advanced shader technology. Right. With this shader 3.0 compliant. Like, we've licensed the chrome demon from the NVIDIA GeForce 4 card.
For this Nintendo 3DS.
This is the most popular of all the chrome demons we've determined from market research was the one from the original GeForce 4 box, first party. Like, the diamond GeForce.
Diamond's not around anymore, are they? Did they get
bought
up?
I think they were bought by Creative.
They were my first... Diamond was my first graphics card. I remember that perfectly.
Oh, man. Adorable.
Diamond Rio was my first...
Did it have a
first...
cool chrome demon on the box?
A definite chrome demon. Yeah. Certainly.
And, demon is kind of shorthand for, like, maybe it's a dragon.
Well,
kind of monster.
That was how I rated the graphics card, though, of, like, oh, this chrome demon, that specularity, I can actually see the Roman Colosseum reflected in his chest. Right. Whereas with this guy, it's just kind of a shine.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to point out that demon doesn't necessarily mean
it doesn't mean, like,
satanic
a spawn
being.
Of hell.
No, it just needs to have... some sort of shiny skin covering, horns,
maybe
producing
horns,
some producing
horns,
a fire
horns
or a
and/or
smoke,
fangs.
Or if it's a girl, bug wings.
Wings
that's
are
true.
Funny, but the only things that it must be translucent.
Dragonfly wings,
more
specifically.
I mean. Yeah, dragonfly wings.
Yeah.
It's all the holding a little luminescent blue
but
lamp.
But if you really think about it, it is like a really, it's a perfect thing. Like it's not an arbitrary decision. It's a creature that exhibits every sort of difficult thing what it would be to render.
Oh yeah.
Smoke.
That's true. Yeah, smoke.
Fire.
Lots of like craggy surfaces on the skin.
Yeah, normal
maps. Bump,
all
bump or normal maps.
Or normal.
Normal maps.
Normal
maps. Rendering chrome.
But yeah, the GDC show floor can still to this day. Or the alternate approach, Granny 3D.
What?
You've never seen the ads
it's a rad game tool.
Middleware?
She's the cool granny 3D.
Oh,
middleware.
I have seen
which
that.
One is
yeah,
granny?
Yeah,
I don't remember which one granny
I don't
is.
Remember
is
what granny
video
is.
Codec or is
I, no, video codec is Bink.
Oh yeah.
But granny 3D.
No, but granny 3D is that they have two they yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I just know that there's a cool granny.
Yeah, by Rad Game Tools.
Yeah.
Oh,
they,
Rad.
They advertise on the back of every single month in Game Boy magazine.
Is have you been to Rad's website? Anytime?
Not for years and years.
Go to Rad's website cuz you're like cuz you know they do really well. Like
oh yeah, well Bink is in like every game.
Yeah,
I mean,
as
yeah.
Bink's great.
Yeah, it's really
whatever.
Good.
You know, like, you can, I mean, we talk a lot about
press
how,
the fuck
how
out of that
smart
video.
Uncharted 2 is and the way that they use the full motion video. Anyway, but like, their website is not indicative of their success.
Well, I think their logo is quite likely still an animated GIF of the little Bink
rad.
Tornado. Yeah, or
no,
that.
The rad with the diamond and the block.
Oh, right, where it's just Viacom.
It's so funny. I like that.
Why are we talking about chrome demons?
Because we're
graphics
talking about
cards.
A
we're
guy
about
coming
the 3DS.
Out of
the
3DS.
Oh, yeah. Because
now
3DS.
All 3DS are going to have 3D... her with a hand coming out of the middle of the screen.
Right, where you... Oh, man. You want like, the
ring on
the Resident Evil ad where the person is playing the 3DS, but they're being choked by a zombie hand with bug eyes.
But I like that what you want out of this isn't the games. It's just Netflix streaming movies in 3D.
I want...
Just so they can advertise those with the...
Hilarious! Where you're like your kid is watching up.
I mean,
without glasses.
I have to say that would actually be an amazing announcement.
Yeah,
like if they were. I mean, if Netflix was actually going to stream 3D movies to your non-glasses 3D device,
it wouldn't be that surprising though, because I imagine that with people pushing 3D TVs really hard in home entertainment stores,
Netflix is going to start doing that anyway.
Netflix if they
But surely there's an entire separate format that needs to be rendered for the 3DS.
Yeah,
ones.
I don't know.
It's not like
I don't even know how 3D works in a 3DS.
I think
3DS.
That it's still I mean on 3D TVs, I think it's still it's just that it's playing
But you don't need glasses for the 3DS.
Every other frame is playing at a different polarity for your 3D glasses
just seen
like a film.
A 3DS?
Yeah, but how does that
Not Has anybody a, actually played one? What the hell? I don't
know, but I mean, I was just going to say, from a tech standpoint, I imagine the 3DS works a similar way, where it's because they say that you can get 3DS games frequently will work at 60 FPS in 2D or 30 FPS in 3D.
Oh, so they're still flipping back.
Because it's
yeah.
literally flipping back and forth, so I imagine that you'd stream a 60 FPS movie and tell it to alternate frames the same way that it's yeah. doing to achieve
its
other
effect. But the 3DS screen pulls a little trickeroo on your eyes. It makes you don't
yeah,
wear glasses.
I think that every other frame sort of has a slight...
It assumes a certain viewing angle for each eye, so you can't...
This is going to not work out, right?
No, it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense for a portable system because your viewing angle is not really going to change.
Right, you're just holding it like
unlike
this.
Unlike a TV
but
where
how
you could
long
be leaning
I mean,
around on a couch and stuff.
This does not feel appealing to me. I get a headache looking at my iPhone, and it's just because it's too bright.
Well, then turn it down.
I have.
And then bask
but, you know,
in the
like,
glow of Pandora in
3D. I don't mean to say that, you know, I mean, that's just...
And then be depressed and suicidal because you can't revisit
yeah, but
Pandora.
Think about this, though. You would end up starting to have people who just don't leave their bed because they can experience...
Pandora.
They can live
yeah.
in Pandora in 3D
they wake
just
up,
right into their eyes.
Their alarm application like, on their yeah. 3DS, it goes off. They wake up in the morning. They just flip, multitask, flip over to...
Your Pandora is ready.
Oh, they just nestle back under the covers.
Yep.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Man, that's going to be rad.
That's.
I've still never seen Avatar, but I'm still going to go live my life in 3D,
oh, you'll
3DS
love it.
Pandora.
You'll love it.
Yeah.
It's for Chris.
Yeah, is it?
Oh, yeah, man. It's to hell with Sweet Smell Success. Throw it away.
It's a good movie. Out now on Criterion. Collection.
Oh, I thought you meant Avatar. Blu-ray.
No.
Sweet Smell Success.
Oh, yeah, that's a good movie.
Yeah, I don't... When's the 3DS coming out?
I don't know. This year.
It's be one of those things I'll accidentally see. Maybe somebody at the office will get one. I'll look at it for a minute.
There's this conference they got going right now.
Are they showing it?
I don't know.
Can you go play one?
Well, maybe.
We don't know these things. We're here to tell you about the weird, wanky, like, clit-hocking design.
They're like, 3DS? I've never seen it.
Major new
I don't even think it exists.
It's just so funny how, like, the more we... I mean, now that you have moved on from covering games to making games, like
we should mention Button.
There's a game
well, we've
called
mentioned
Button.
It 3 times now.
No, we haven't. We've mentioned it, but we haven't explained what it is.
I know, but that's,
we've just
that's,
said
that's
Button, which
to,
no
that's
one's going
to
interpret
the, that's
as
the mystery of Button.
Yeah,
there's a game called Button.
It's based on the film
brutally...
Benjamin Button.
In turn, based on the F. Scott Fitzgerald short story. Man, speaking of which, did you guys play the?
The Great Gatsby NES game? Yes.
Yeah. It's fucking quality.
Yeah. Did you beat it?
I didn't play it because it's been so long since I've read The Great Gatsby that I couldn't remember how the book.
It's all right. Just
but The Great Gatsby, it's on my bookshelf. It's on my nightstand right now.
Yeah.
So it's next in line.
There's been a hilarious, like, thumbs Twitter feed, like, revitalization of interest in The Great Gatsby, which seems to have predated the NES game. And then, like, in the midst of this weird Great Gatsby revival in our, like, mindshare, suddenly there was this
announcement.
False retro Great Gatsby NES game on the internet.
Yeah, but also,
that showed
the
up
Great
in
Gatsby
the Baz
film.
Luhrmann Great Gatsby film
oh, yeah.
in Australia.
And the Great Gatsby film, of course.
Filmed
yeah.
in Australia with Kangaroo Jack.
Yes.
He stole the green light.
He's not giving it back. That's the important part.
Yeah, play that Great Gatsby NES game if you haven't yet.
With it's Kangaroo really Jack in it.
No, that's not.
No, that's the movie.
Kangaroo Jack.
That'll be the. Eventually, there will be a game based on Kangaroo Jack.
There's
going to
be
Great Gatsby stole the money.
A retro
or 8-bit
Kangaroo Jack Great Gatsby game.
Yeah. Once the Kangaroo Jack Great Gatsby film crossover reaches cultural, like, you know, sort of.
Well,
and
that comes
out then someone's going to make the NES remake of that and be like, oh man, remember this? Remember when 80s THQ made this for the NES?
It's like when they put out that. Oh, never mind.
Oh, that game based on Kangaroo Jack,
no,
Great Gatsby Edition?
A while back, you were talking about them putting out a retro 8-bit game as if it was the prequel to a 360 game that was coming out.
Oh, that's happened a couple times recently, actually.
It's like that.
There's like
with
Dark Void is maybe what you're thinking of?
Perhaps. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Benjamin Button. It's a game. Button.
Oh, Button.
So, brutally unfair tactics, totally okay now, I think.
Yeah, Button was a game they had at the IGF that was basically right next to Nidhogg.
We live in a world where we play games like Button and Nidhogg.
That's Button. It's an acronym. Also.
I know. But I like that. Those are two great names.
Yeah.
They're ridiculous. They sound like make-believe things.
Also, Nidhogg, just so you know, is spelled N-I-D-H-O-G-G. And I'm pretty sure this guy makes up the names for his games just like by making up a word, unless you guys know what Nidhogg means.
I think this strange title. But I think
it's like, well, it's like Narbacular Drop, the portal precursor.
Uh-huh.
They said they made that up because they knew that if anyone ever searched Google for that, they would only ever find that game. It's so that they could never accidentally not find that game if that's what you're searching for on Google. Which is kind of smart, I guess. And Nidhogg is probably the only thing that will ever pop up with Nidhogg.
Yeah, Button is a party game that very much assumes that you and your friends are all in the exact same space and are all going to agree to play by this game's rules, because it just keeps... It's a sort of big screen type game, except that it's for the PC, which is kind of weird. But the four people are assigned either a key or an Xbox button, or in our case, a quadrant of a soft DDR dance mat. And then on the screen it says, take 6 steps back. So all four people who are playing take six steps back away from their computer.
This is like a random
away from their controller.
Time.
Yeah.
Away from their button or away from the screen?
From
you
the
can
button.
Carry the controller with
no,
you.
No.
You leave the controller there because you eventually have to race back to it and then defend your button. So it'll say, take 3, 4, 5, 6 steps back, whatever it is. Then it'll say something completely insane and awkward. Like, I mean, apparently it sometimes will tell everyone to take off their shirt. Or like when we were playing, it said, hold hands with the sexiest other person you're playing with. Or go into the fetal position and stay there. Or for one person we saw watching it, it said, everyone close their eyes and stand on one foot. Which means you can't actually see the next prompt unless you cheat. At which point it says, don't cheat when you look at the screen. But then it'll say, do that. And then while you're doing that, it'll say 3, 2, 1. Now, while still doing this, press your button 5 times. Or anyone who presses their button 11 times loses. Or whatever. It'll just give you a completely very specific instruction. So everyone then, while holding hands or while rolling on the floor of the GDC Expo Hall as in a fetal position, sort of wobble your way back to the button and then press your button that number of times, like 1 to the 0, 9 to 11. Or press someone else's button and ruin their game. So it ends up with, when we were playing it out with a DDR dance mat on the ground in the fetal position, it basically meant 4 adults with GDC passes.
Males.
All dudes were basically just rolling around on a goddamn DDR soft mat, pushing each other away from their button so that you would defend your exact 11 presses so you could win the round.
It feels like the DDR soft mat is the perfect controller for this thing.
It was good. I mean, they had built their own sort of hacked 360 controller that just had 4 huge buttons up on display as well, so that you could all race back in a standing position and just slam a buzzer. Sort of. I imagine this game would work really well with the Scenic controller if they support it, I don't know if they do.
No, they support anything. I mean, it's just if you can plug it into your
PC. If your PC has 4 USB ports for 4 Scenic controllers.
I think the Scenic controller...
Is it just one sort of just octopus? A quadrupus?
No. They're individual, from what I understand.
But they're wireless, I think.
They're individual, but I actually don't think your computer or your 360 like recognizes it as different than a 360 controller.
It does, because you don't know jack... If you play it on a jack with the Scenic controller, it rearranges the UI and talks about pressing the big button for the jack attack and stuff. So it does actually report itself differently.
Oh, cool.
Take that.
God, even though jack is a good game.
It is good. God, they did a good job with that.
God bless those games.
Yeah.
We have some issues with it. But...
mainly the scoring. But the jack attack scoring is weird.
And I wish it was more than 10 questions on an episode.
I wish that it was like the old ones where you could choose 13 or 21. That was nice.
But I mean...
But it's good. They did a good job.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of
you should get. You don't know Jack.
Yeah, it's nice that since we left Idle Thumbs and came back, they relaunched You Don't Know Jack. It was nice of them.
Yeah, it was good. Guys. They did it to bring us back.
That's true.
We took the cast and we weren't giving it back.
That's true.
You like that, Chris?
I did. I did like it. I did.
Anyway, Button was weird.
Is anyone else? I was just like going to pose this out to the fucking internet at large web. Here. Remember that movie Kangaroo Jack that was fucking produced by Jerry Bruckheimer? And it was about a goddamn kangaroo, I guess, in Australia. He was from Australia.
I've heard that he took the money.
Yeah. The tagline for this movie on the poster was, he stole the money, ... and he's not giving it back. What kind of stupid tagline is that? Of course, if you steal something, you're not giving it back.
It's implied.
It's fucking implied.
Otherwise,
it's assumed.
You'd be borrowing.
You're not. Yeah, exactly. He took the money for a bit and then he gave it back. Nope, that's not a movie. That's not conflict. That's not interesting. He stole the money and of course he's not giving it back. You don't need to say that. And no one else that I ever mentioned this to seemed to understand why I thought it was so goddamn funny. And so I just want to put this out there.
No, it's fine.
And we don't even really take mail anymore, I guess. I mean, I guess you can send questions
at idlethumbs.net.
Did you notice that? Well, that was that. This is my question. Where I never actually address readers like this.
Attention, so you guys. This is really rare.
It feels really weird because I keep feeling like I'm asking you guys this.
I like that it's just, did you notice that the tagline to Kangaroo Jack was weird?
Well, because
did that stick with anyone else for 15 years?
Because if it weren't for that tagline, that would have been just like one more of those completely unidentifiable movies I'm never going to see and that I'm never going to think about again. But that tagline has stuck in my brain for years and years. I think, Jake, you were actually with me when I was.
So this is really this is brilliant marketing on their point. They just trolled the shit out of you.
I've still never seen this movie, though, except I guess I have talked about it a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, something tells me that out of your constant communication about Kangaroo Jack, at least one person has seen the movie.
My constant communication about Kangaroo Jack.
Your bi-monthly Kangaroo Jack slogan deployment.
He stole the money, and he's not giving it back.
Maybe
I just walk down the street muttering that. And people look it up and go watch Kangaroo Jack on their 3DS 3D device on Netflix.
We've post-converted Kangaroo Jack into 3D because Kangaroo Jack's just trending like mad.
All I remember Jake's saying. Looking at the recorder that we're using to record this.
Well,
okay? Yeah, it's fine. I think maybe
we wrap it up.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening, guys, and we miss you. It's been nice.
I make no guarantees that we'll do more of these during GDC or PAX East.
Or that you'll even hear this one.
Or
it's a mystery whether anyone will hear this.
But yeah. You might hear this and more or less.
At idlethumbs.net.
We might recall this podcast. You might hear less.
We might release it in reverse, 50% through the right channel, 50% through the left channel, on two subsequent days, nested inside of the Bombcast.
Encoded within a huge PNG file.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
Games.
Excuse me. Butts.
People love that he stole the money, and
get this, he's also not giving it back.